Welcome back, everybody, to Constructive Uncoupling, the podcast devoted to amicable divorces. I'm Judy Weigel, your host and amicable divorce expert. Why? Because that's all I do, amicable divorces. This episode will be devoted to a book by a man named Bill Eddy. Now, I interviewed Bill Eddy in January of this year. It's a two-part interview, January 8th and I believe January 15th. Bill Eddy is the world-renowned leading guru on divorcing people with personality disorders, high-conflict people in legal disputes, and everything about children. Bill started out as a social worker, went on to be a family law attorney, and then a mediator. But the book that I'm going to be promoting, because it's phenomenal, and I would love for you to buy it, the title of it is Don't Alienate the Kids. So this is about co-parenting and making decisions during a divorce so that the kids aren't alienated. And what I wanted to do was read to you from the introduction of the book, because in the introduction, Bill lays out why parental alienation happens, how to identify it, how to know when you are doing things unknowingly that may be promoting parental alienation and alienation of the children. He's such a fascinating person. So I'm going to read straight from the introduction of Bill's book, and I'm telling you, you will learn a lot just from that, and you will absolutely become a better parent in terms of recognizing how to change parental alienation, because it does not benefit the children. And this is all about how do we benefit the children in the wake of something as difficult as a divorce? So here we go. This is from Bill. I wrote this book out of frustration and hope. It's intended for parents, professionals, and anyone concerned about the next generation. It's about two growing problems that overlap. Number one, more and more children and parents are suffering from high conflict divorces unnecessarily. When I speak of divorce throughout this book, I include the separation of unmarried parents who face the same problems. And number two, recent research suggests that high conflict personalities are increasing in our society, and one of the contributing factors may be the lifelong dysfunctional lessons children learn from high conflict divorces. Therefore, the information in this book is designed to assist parents and professionals in helping children learn skills for resilience for a lifetime, even during a divorce. First subsection, frustration. For the past 17 years, I have been a family law attorney, a certified family law specialist. I have represented clients in family court in many high-conflict divorces. Over time, in many of these cases, the children have become alienated from a parent. I use that term broadly to mean that the child resisted or totally refused all contact with that parent. In some of these cases, I represented the rejected parent, who the child didn't want to see. In other cases, I represented the favored parent who seemed to win the child's loyalty and total agreement. However, in both types of cases, the children were stressed and unhappy and learned dysfunctional ways of handling close relationships, ways which may negatively affect them for the rest of their lives. I was frustrated in both types of cases. I had many restless nights trying to figure out how to protect my clients and their children. The opposing parent would hate me. The opposing lawyer would criticize me. And the judge would frown and disregard much of what I had to say. Out of about 400 cases I had as an attorney representing one party, approximately 40 included an issue of child alienation. Out of all the issues I handled in family court, child support, property division, custody and visitation, even child sexual abuse, I found child alienation to be the most frustrating because it seemed to be based on nothing. There was no credible evidence, but lots of opinions. No one could figure out these cases, so there was a lot of blaming Anger grew as everyone's frustration grew, for parents, lawyers, counselors, and judges. This anger was contagious, and the children absorbed it as well. I always intended to focus my law practice on divorce mediation. After 15 years of representing clients in family court, as well as handling about 1,000 mediation cases, I finally stopped taking court cases. Some of my last court cases were alienation cases. In one case, my client was the rejected father. His case had gone on for about 6 years in and out of court until his daughter totally stopped spending time with him. At my last court hearing, the judge said there was nothing he could do. In the other case, my client was the mother who became the rejected parent. The father had been ordered into domestic violence treatment near the start of the case. Even though he had about one-third of the parenting time, he returned to court repeatedly seeking primary custody of their son. Even after the judge sanctioned the father once for a totally unnecessary hearing, he kept bringing the mother back to court. For 10 years, the mother was the primary custodial parent. Then, after relentless pressure by his father, the son ran away to his father's and stayed there. She gave up exhausted. Neither of these children had rejected either parent prior to their parents going to court. Next subsection, the wall of alienation. Somehow, the adversarial structure of court focused on determining who was the all-good parent and who was the all-bad parent. The allegations went back and forth. Quote, the father must be abusing the child. That's why she doesn't want to see him and cries before his visits, end quote. Or, quote, her mother must be alienating her. That's why she refuses to see me, end quote. Or, quote, the father must be alienating the child. That's why he refuses to see the mother. Or the mother must have done something to make the child estranged from her. It goes on. The court process was all about who put the wall up between a parent and the child. It's all his fault. He has only himself to blame. I've done nothing wrong. Or it's all her fault. I've been a loving parent while she just spews vituperative venom against me. The whole battle over picking the all-good parent and the all-bad parent was a long, drawn-out tug of war until one parent lost. Most of the time, it was the rejected parent. But sometimes the rejected parent won a change of primary custody, and the previously favored parent left the city, the state, or the country, or attempted to commit suicide, as occurred in more than one case. It has become an ugly contest. It's not a gender issue. It's not about who has custody. What alienation is not. From all of these experiences, I learned a lot about what alienation is not. It's not a gender issue. I have represented fathers and mothers who were the rejected parent. It's not about who has custody. While most rejected parents have been the non-custodial parent with less parenting time, I have represented several custodial parents who became the rejected parent. It's not just a defense against child sex abuse allegations. Child alienation is an issue in over 20% of contested custody cases at court. Yet child sexual abuse is alleged in only about 2 to 5% of contested custody cases. It's not just a defense against domestic violence allegations. From my experience, perpetrators of domestic violence engage in more alienating behaviors than victims of domestic violence. It's not just a defense against child abuse allegations. I have seen cases where one parent had abusive behaviors and the other parent had alienating behaviors. I also know of cases where a parent with abusive behaviors also engaged in alienating behaviors. Okay, this is getting crazy-making, I know. And the other parent had neither abusive nor alienating behaviors. I learned that abuse and alienation are independent sets of behavior. It's not a common symptom of child abuse or domestic violence. Most abused children are not alienated. Most love their parents but want the abuse to stop. Many fear their abusive parents and are very careful not to upset them. Most would never say they hated the parent or would risk running away, behaviors I have seen much more common in alienation cases, not abuse cases or violence cases. That's really interesting, isn't it? It's not caused by one disparaging remark or incident. From my experience, alienation is a gradual process which may begin before separation, but mostly grows during the divorce process. And this is why I'm taking a break here. This is why it's so very important to really spend time, if possible, going through the emotional divorce first, getting yourself squared away and kind of on an even emotional plane before you begin the divorce process, because honestly, you're going to take it out on the children and they're going to learn behaviors that you never thought they were learning. So if alienation is not about the above common theories, then what is it? Learning about child abuse. I was a social worker for many years before becoming a lawyer. My first job out of college was as a social worker in New York City. In 1981, I got my master's in social work degree, and I counseled children and adults for much of that decade. Many of them had been abused. In the 1980s, child abuse, especially child sexual abuse, was starting to be taken more seriously. Some of my clients were teenagers who had been sexually abused, and some of my adult clients had been sexually abused as children. Some cases were extremely shocking. Others seemed mild, but the long-term effects were still quite damaging. Now we're going to really learn something interesting. The next section is titled, Learning About Family Systems. In 1980, I was in training as a family therapist. I learned that families are like a system, like the solar system, in which everyone has a pull on everyone else. Each family system of relating is influenced and maintained by everyone in the family, but in different ways. Usually, everyone in the family system is blind to their own role in reinforcing problems and blind to their potential role in solving problems. My job as a family therapist was to help enough members of the family system to shift their behavior, to change the whole family for the better, especially for the benefit of the children. That was the only way that family problems could really be improved. No one person could really change unless most in the family changed. Children's behavior was often the result of unresolved issues between the parents. This was rarely obvious on the surface. And again, I'm going to break away. You've got to get the emotional divorce dealt with before you go into the legal divorce. And to get the emotional divorce dealt with, you really need therapy. You really need to know how to sort out the details of why you're getting divorced with a therapeutic professional. Don't blame each other. If you can get to forgiveness, forgive each other. And just realize we're all imperfect people. And sometimes the best we can do is not that great. But it's the best we can do. But moving forward in the emotional divorce, you have to take care of yourselves first. You have to both be on an even emotional plane. Nobody can be scared and worried about what the other will do. And then you file for divorce. Really and truly, that's how to file for divorce. All right, back to Bill's book. I learned that other family members, grandparents, aunts, and uncles, etc., were hidden parts of the family system as well and could have a powerful influence over the problems on the surface. And of course, therapists, teachers, and others involved with the family also became part of the family system. Everyone reinforced the problems in hidden ways, so they needed to reinforce the solutions. During the 1980s, I was also volunteering as a mediator with community mediation programs that resolved conflicts between neighbors, landlords and tenants, and businesses and consumers. They had similar dynamics with everyone contributing to the problem and or the solution. So there's a system. He's now talking about family systems. There's a system everywhere. There's a system at work. There's a system within our friendships. Very important to know that we are part of different systems. I really liked mediation and decided to pursue it as a career, but there were no paying jobs available at that time. I noticed that lawyers were getting paid to do mediation, so I decided to go to law school. When I graduated and passed the bar in 1992, I set up my own law and mediation office. I also decided to practice family law in court for a couple years while establishing my mediation practice. I ended up taking cases for 15 years. Next section, learning about divorce disputes. My social work background was really helpful in my law practice, as many cases involve substance abuse, child abuse, and/or domestic violence. However, I never heard of parental alienation syndrome until I was practicing as a lawyer in the 90s. The battle over abuse versus alienation was a surprise to me. Because of my background, I could see there was a lot that parents and professionals in the family court system misunderstood about the children and abuse. Because of my training in family systems, I knew that families weren't as simple as the abuser versus the alienator. However, as I began practicing law, it became clearer to me that parents are not usually equal when there is abuse in a family. More often, only one parent is an offender. And this is with child abuse, domestic violence, and substance abuse. And the other parent is not any of these. Some divorcing parents had high conflict personalities, while others did not. From my experience and my surveys of family law professionals, I believe that half to two-thirds of high-conflict families have only one parent with a high-conflict personality who is driving the dispute, while the other parent is mostly acting reasonably and just trying to protect the children from the high-conflict parent. However, because families operate as a system, everyone adapts and reinforces problems in hidden little ways. Even reasonable people would overreact and reinforce problems. I realized that the problem of a child rejecting a parent wasn't all one parent's fault or the other's. And it wasn't always fathers who were rejected. And it wasn't always mothers who were favored. I represented both about equally. I realized that my clients, who were the rejected parents, were in a real bind. While they were understandably angry toward the other parent or the child, they made things worse. While they usually weren't the cause of the alienation, they reinforced the alienation without realizing it. When they did nothing and cooperated with the child's rejection, if you really want me to stop seeing you, I'll stop. That's one parent talking to the child. Nothing ever got better. When they supported their child going to individual counseling, the alienation continued. When they went to reunification counseling with their child, the alienation continued. As the rejected parent, they were blamed for all of these failures. Yet everyone in the family system seemed to reinforce these problems. Even my clients, who were the favored parents, didn't really win. They were also very frustrated, defensive, and at times depressed. I remember one judge railing at me about my client, the mother, after the child said she didn't want to see her father. "Mr. Eddie," the judge said, "I know what your client is doing. She's telling the child negative things about her father to alienate the child." I responded, "Your Honor, my client is trying to be very careful not to say anything to the child against her father. Since she was criticized for discussing the case with the child 4 years ago," okay, she should have been, "she was very careful not to say anything negative since then. And I believe she was being very careful, but the alienation didn't change and the judge gave up. While my client was favored by the child, everyone else, the father's attorney, and the judge, blamed her for being a despicable person, along with her lawyer, me." Next section, professionals in the family system. I started realizing that the problem was bigger than just the parents. Lawyers sometimes contributed to the problem. They often made extreme and emotional arguments in court that devastated one or the other parent. This is why it's so important to choose the right lawyer. As a lawyer, I learned early on, after temporarily losing a custody battle, temporarily, he says, that I couldn't just say that my client was doing a good job. I had to attack the other parent as doing a horrible job. I learned that's what worked in the adversarial process of custody battles. And this is so horrible. Judges sometimes contributed with their anger at the parents and made extreme orders in an effort to gain control, such as supervised visitation or no contact, while an investigation labored on for weeks or months to see if allegations were really true. They criticized one or both parents. They tried having long hearings. They tried having short hearings. They tried ordering counseling, ordering lawyers for the children, called guardians ad litem, ordering psychological evaluations. They made threats. They fulfilled threats. But children remained alienated or became even more alienated. I mean, this is the ugly truth about what happens. I mean, court is there for a reason. If you really, really, really can't get decisions made and you've tried so hard and your attorneys can't even help, then you go to court because you really need the judge to make decisions. But if you can avoid court, avoid it. Really work it out in mediation. Even counselors seem to contribute to the problem at times. Each parent's counselor would report that his or her client was really great and had no problems to work on. For example, the mother's therapist. The father just doesn't understand how hurtful he has been to the child. The mother is merely trying to protect the child from his negative behavior and poor judgment. She's doing a good job. The father's therapist. The father has a lot of insight into himself, and frankly, I can see no behavior on his part that is causing the child to resist seeing him. Then, of course, individual child therapists are often ordered for the child in these alienation cases. Everyone hopes or expects that the individual child therapist will be able to turn the child's attitude around, then the child and the rejected parent will reconcile. Sometimes these individual child therapists work valiantly to be supportive of both parents' relationships with the child. But sometimes they succumb to agreeing with the child's rejection of one parent. They agree that the child is realistically estranged from that parent and that this is a reasonable position for the child to take. For example, the boy is so angry with his mother that I wouldn't even recommend a joint session with the mother yet. The boy needs to stop being so angry at what she has done first. She should work on herself to be more accepting of his negative feedback about her new relationship. She worked on herself, but the boy never stopped being angry with her, so nothing ever changed and the boy stopped seeing her. Okay, embodied in this last quote, by the way, she should work on herself to be more accepting of his negative feedback about her new relationship. If I can impart one thing to you in this episode, and I've talked about it in other episodes, if you can avoid having a relationship or presenting that relationship to your children until your children are at a place where they have adjusted to the divorce and are happy again, you are going to screw them up potentially with a new relationship. They have to sort out the details of the divorce first. They have to learn how to live in two houses. They have to understand what divorce is. They have to feel confident that their parents still love them. They have to be on a schedule that flows well. Then you can introduce them to a new relationship. But I am telling you, if you think that going through divorce entitles you to feel good through a new relationship before the divorce is over and before all the details of the co-parenting schedule are sorted out, you're just heaping a load of trouble on your children. Not that the new person you're bringing into their lives is horrible. Maybe they're fabulous. But the time has to be right. And you have to sort out where your child is first before you bring that new person in their lives. Any of you who have been divorced, I mean, who have been children of divorce, how long did it take you to feel comfortable with the divorce? And how many of you, while you were trying to feel comfortable with the divorce, had to adjust to a new partner in one or both of your parents' lives? It is exceptional in the blended family context of life that things flow smoothly immediately. Give your kids a chance. Give your kids a chance to adjust to divorce before you have them try and adjust to a new relationship you may have. And God forbid they don't like the new relationship. Now you've just created more problems for them. So if you can make the kids first, let them get adjusted, and then bring new people around, I think you're doing well for your children. Oh, let's see. The daughter despises her father. He is an embarrassment to her. This is another quote by Bill Eddy. Oh, a therapist reporting. She doesn't want him coming to her school. She feels he does not respect her. If he respected her, he would stay away until she feels more comfortable with him. Okay, children are speaking. In some cases, the judge would wait until the child's therapist said the child was ready to spend more time with his or her other parent. Of course, this never happened. In one case, I wrote a letter to the child's therapist who was not used to treating children in family court cases. He had immediately taken sides against my client at the request of the child. In my letter, I quoted research and tried to be friendly and understanding of his lack of knowledge about how to handle such cases. He wrote back a letter angry with me and stating that I totally misunderstood his intentions in the case. This correspondence made it into a court hearing, and the judge made a finding that I had been too adversarial in writing my letter to the therapist. Even I was part of the problem. This is so sensitive. Everything is so sensitive. And if you even knew Bill Eddy, if you ever met him, this is the most mild-mannered person in the world and the most understanding person in the world. So I think I'm going to vote on the side of the letter tried to be understanding, especially Bill came from a point of being a licensed social worker, which is the kissing cousin of a therapist. So he had been in that world. And he teaches therapists now about high conflict divorce and child alienation. But do be careful about the therapists you bring on too. They really have to have experience in court or they can make things even worse. Next section, 1,000 Little Bricks. Out of all of these experiences, plus a lot of reading, attending seminars, and having sometimes heated discussions, I came to the conclusion that no one parent or single professional can solve this problem. Because I realized that the wall between a child and one parent is not built by just one parent or just one event or disparaging remark. I now believe that the wall of alienation is built with at least 1,000 little bricks, which have come from a perfect storm of three cultures of blame. Number one, the family's culture of blame when a high conflict parent is involved. Number two, the family court culture of blame when one or more professionals get emotionally hooked. Number three, our society's rapidly escalating culture of blame, which contributes to alienation and also affects children's personality development. These three cultures of blame repeatedly teach children three bad behaviors, which they absorb: the all-or-nothing thinking, the unmanaged emotions, and extreme behaviors. Okay, so the three cultures of blame: all-or-nothing thinking, unmanaged emotions, extreme behaviors. I think of these three bad behaviors as little bricks which add up over the weeks, months, and years to create and reinforce alienation in close relationships for many children in divorce. When children are exposed to enough of these bad behaviors, which are the little bricks, their unconscious solution to the family conflict is to absorb an all-or-nothing view of each parent. One all good and one all bad. They express their feelings with great intensity and often have uncontrollable outbursts against their rejected parent. Extreme behaviors become normal as parents yell at each other in front of the children at parenting exchanges. Lawyers argue for extreme measures, no contact or total custody reversals. Counselors say that it is reasonable that a child has rejected a parent. realistic estrangement, it's called. So just accept it. And judges make extreme orders, no contact, total custody reversals, or just give up. Next section, hope. Despite all of this, I have hope. I believe we have the knowledge and potential to turn the corner and change these cultures of blame into cultures of learning, cultures of learning skills. We just need enough reasonable people to learn the skills and teach them to the kids. These three big skills are flexible thinking, managed emotions, moderate behaviors. Flexible thinking, managed emotions, moderate behaviors. So if you compare the two, the culture of blame, all or nothing thinking, the culture of learning, the cultures of learning skills, flexible thinking. So all or nothing thinking turns into flexible thinking. Unmanaged emotions turns into managed emotions. And extreme behaviors turn into moderate behaviors. These are the skills for handling a rapidly changing world and an unknown future. They are the key skills for close relationships, decision-making, and leadership. Children who learn these skills will have unlimited potential because they will be able to handle problems without becoming overwhelmed or distracted by blaming others. The children who learn these skills will be the problem solvers of the future. So how do we do this? First, we all need to really understand that the problem isn't about bad parents, but about bad behaviors. Many people's bad behaviors. Then all of us need to be involved in working on the solution. No one person, parent or professional, can prevent or repair alienation. It has to be a change in these cultures, family culture, the court culture, and so the society culture surrounding the child. What really gives me hope are three new developments. Number one, abusive cultures can change. For example, a recent comprehensive study by the U.S. federal government showed that child abuse reduced between 1993 and 2006 at a rate of 23% for physical abuse, 33% for emotional abuse, and 44% for sexual abuse. Unfortunately, the economic downturn since 2008 has increased child abuse once again. But we now know that we have the ability to make a large-scale change for the benefit of children when enough people work on it. Number two, brain research has new discoveries about how children learn. In this book, I will explain some very new discoveries which can be used to help parents help their children develop skills for resilience rather than alienation. Number three, cognitive behavioral therapy methods are having success in changing people's behavior. Even some people with personality disorders can change by learning small skills in small steps with lots of structure and encouragement. Some no longer have a disorder. Personality disorders are rigid patterns of distressful thinking, unmanaged emotions, and behavior problems dating from childhood. And he's going to talk about this in chapter one. By recognizing that many people going through the legal system have these disorders, courts can require efforts to learn skills rather than focusing on shame and blame. By recognizing these disorders, courts can become more effective at understanding who can change and who can't, which is essential in the protection of children. And I just want to tangentially say, Bill is starting to work with courts and judges around the country to really change the way they think and look at custody issues. For these reasons, I have hope. But as I will explain in this book, it is urgent that we work together to help children learn these skills now. The future of our society may depend on it. If you are a reasonable parent is the last section. If you are a reasonable parent going through a separation or divorce or are considering separating, this book is designed to help you avoid experiencing a high conflict divorce. even if neither of you is a high conflict parent. The actions you take and the ways you deal with your children can unintentionally teach them high conflict behaviors, which can become part of their personality development for a lifetime. If you are a reasonable parent who is separating from or divorcing a parent with a high conflict personality, you need to be careful not to fall into some very common traps. When someone is violent, makes false statements, or otherwise engages in extreme behavior, it's easy to overreact or underrespond. Instead, you often need to do the opposite of what you feel like doing. In this book, I will explain ways of dealing with a high-conflict parent while teaching your child resistance at the same time. Remember, actions often speak louder than words. So that's the end of the introduction section. I highly recommend you read this book. You can either get it on Amazon or you can go on my website on the inspiration page and you'll find it there. My website is divorceresourceinc.com. divorceresourceinc.com. You'll look for Don't Alienate the Kids by Bill Eddy, E-D-D-Y. And you will love your life. You will learn so much. Every single person I turn on to any one of Bill's books always calls me back and says, thank you, thank you, thank you. And Bill is accessible. You can actually look for him through his company, the High Conflict Institute in San Diego. The High Conflict Institute in San Diego. So thank you very much for joining me on this episode of Constructive Uncoupling, the podcast devoted to amicable divorces. Please go to Apple, Podbean, wherever you're looking at this, subscribe. Send this to a friend who you know is going through divorce or about to go through divorce or dealing with child alienation after the divorce is final. And I think they'll get a lot from this podcast. Thank you again for joining me. If you need to reach me at all, I'm at Judy, J-U-D-Y, constructiveuncoupling.com. Judy at constructiveuncoupling.com. And I look forward to our next episode.